Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Nolan Radio. A little bit of change of pace today. We're talking punk. We're talking ska. Talking comics with St. Petersburg Wonderkind, Josh Sullivan. That's his band you're hearing in the background. Can't Do It. That's the name of the band. Can't Do It. Well, obviously, he can do it, and very much is doing it. And I'm looking forward to introducing you all to Josh. Who previously appeared in Nolan's Pop Book Review 223. Longtime readers may remember that's when Andy Lolino and I went over to the St. Pete Public Library to look up files on Dr. Paul Bearer and Creature Feature for the Dr. Paul Bearer Creature Feature fan database, and on the way back to Tampa, we stopped by the Globe Coffee House to meet Josh Sullivan and talk to him and get a few facts, and we were in such a hurry, we weren't able to get a whole lot in a very short time, which was regrettable. But I always wanted to get back with him and interview Josh and do it right. And this attempt still was plagued with some problems. I got a hold of Josh about 4:30 a.m., and suddenly my recording program on my computer decided to take a dump on me and wouldn't record. So I had to reinstall an older version on the fly, and that led to some problems. Mainly in the very beginning of the program, there's a little distortion, and at the end it abruptly cuts off, but that's not a big deal. And then plus, after about a half an hour, Josh's phone started going out, his battery was starting dying, and so we had to kind of cut it off, but we did get a good 30 minutes out of it, and I'm looking forward to you all hearing from Josh, who I actually first became aware of through his website and his comics work on joshcomics.com. So, without further ado, I'd like to present the interview with Josh Sullivan. On the phone with me right now is Josh Sullivan of St. Petersburg, Florida, a comic artist extraordinaire and ska punk impresario. Josh, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hello. This is the first time I'm introducing you to the Crazed Fanboy audience via Nolan Radio so they can hear the voice of Josh.
Well, I sound like a 12-year-old, so it's nothing much.
But you just had a birthday, and I think you're 23 now?
Yeah, I turned 23, and I still look a healthy 13.
13. Long-time readers might remember my interview with Josh in the Josh Encounter in Nolan's Pop Culture Review number 223. And there's some pictures of Josh there, which are very hard to find because you can't really find him on his website. It's usually like only eyes up or nose down or turn from the camera or something like that. But, see, you were born and raised in Saginaw, Michigan, and moved to St. Pete in 1999.
Yep, I've been back a few times, but I'm not moving back to that hellhole.
That hellhole. You didn't like Saginaw, and you like the Tampa-St. Pete area?
Yeah, I really enjoy it. The art scene, the music scene, both of them are really huge, and, there's music, all sorts of music genres, music scenes, and, if whatever kind of art you do, there's an audience for it here.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because a lot of people move down from the area, and even a lot of artists in the area are always looking for the greener grass in other cities. So I'm glad to hear somebody actually defend the area.
Well, it's I haven't been too many places, and so I don't know what to compare it to, but it's definitely a lot better than Saginaw, Michigan.
Saginaw was just hostile to arts, than the Tampa Bay area.
not real hostile, but there wasn't a huge breeding ground for, artists at that time. The music scene, though, on the other hand, is just blown up, and it's really, really big. And there's, I'm really proud of that, there's venues for a lot of stuff. It's, in a lot of ways, it's just like the Tampa Bay area. There's pretty much a show going on every night. There's venues for all different types of music, and it's really cool. You know, I'd like to play there someday just to show people what we can do.
Kind of coming back to home and
hit song Saginaw Songs.
Now, I'd like to interject at this time, the first time I even discovered you, was due to, somebody sending me a link to your awesome website, joshcomics.com, which I recommend to anybody to go check that out. It's, just full of personality and it has all of your art and, all a very impressive message board, guest book. It's very fully featured and, it really says what you're all about and, it's really entertaining, very funny.
Well, thank you. A lot of people, they've been to it over the years. I think the 5-year anniversary will be in May, which is really crazy because I remember, you know, just starting it out and it was just pretty much a blog site. You know, I would just update people with what was going on with me because really, you know, that's the only way I could communicate with people that, you know, my friends that were in Michigan still. And, it really, really took off, and it's so cool hearing, you know, running into people that say they've been there, or, you know, they've seen my art on there, because, you know, with that site, I can have, you know, I can have an audience all over the world, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely agree, and I can identify with that. In fact, a kind of a funny coincidence, and this doesn't say a lot about me, is we started our sites about the same year, about the same time in the same year, actually. I only had about a 3-month head start on you, in plus 20 some odd years. but the web, wasn't quite mature enough to take our brand of lunacy. And it really wasn't, cheap enough for me to have a computer before about 1999.
Yeah, it was, like mine, I had started mine, just while I didn't have a computer at the time. I'd started mine while I went to libraries and updated my site like that. And then, once I got a computer, you know, a few months later, that's when I finally started putting my comics and stuff up on there and my art. And it was,
But you were drawing a long time before that.
Yeah, I've got stuff. I've got drawings that I did when I was like 2, you know. And,
wow.
And,
So you've always been gifted.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. You know, I
gifted may be an exaggeration, but driven, ambitious.
Really, really driven. And, you know, I've always known that I've wanted to do something artistically, and for the longest time I had wanted to make a career out of doing comics.
Mm-hmm.
But then once I had come to the realization that not a lot of people that just do specifically comics make a lot of money or make a career out of it, that's when I started opening my eyes to other things, you know, like painting and writing, just doing different things that, you know, I could express myself with. And then eventually, now doing music and stuff, you know, I don't know if that's ever going to turn out to be a career thing. It's a lot of fun, but, you know, the most important thing to me is I'm expressing myself creatively in a whole different manner now.
Yeah, and speaking of music, you've got you're in the nascent stages, as it were, of ska punk with a band called Can't Do It, and they've been playing out for about, 6 months now?
Yeah, we had our first show June... Oh wait, let's see. Our first show was May 21st, and we've grown from. I guess back about last year, about this time, we had about 7 people in the band, and then, you know, we lost a few members and got a few, and then kicked a few people out. And now we're an 8-piece, and you know we all get along real good, and you know we're like our own little family, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the best kind of setup you can have is something like that. So there were people that didn't make the cut. So that's that tabloid fodder, right?
Yeah, some of the members didn't get along with other members. Some of the other members invited themselves into the band. Just different conflicting things. And, you know, for the first 6 or 7 months of us, as a band, we really didn't have a bass player, and once we got our bass player, Jeff, that's when stuff started taking off, and we actually, you know, started getting shows, and we actually wanted to, you know, start working on things more productively.
Back to comics for just a moment. You've had quite a bit of coverage in the St. Pete area newspapers and magazines the last couple of years, right?
Yeah.
You were in Weekly World Planet as Best of Something.
Yeah, I was in... I've been in the Best of the Bay actually every year since I've been down here, except for last year, I think. Just, like, not for, like, specifically winning awards, but just mentions here and there, like, mm-hmm. maybe for the Globe. Or, but I think the coolest thing I got was 2002. I won, one of the writers nominated me for, I had best artist with most bizarre sense of humor, or something along those lines.
Best artist with most biggest self-deprecating sense of humor, or something like that. That was
best artist with, you know, biggest use of swear words and, and, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, like I wrote in the PCR article, Josh Comics isn't for everybody. It's got a real approachable look to it, but when you get into it, it's very profane.
Yeah, it's really funny because I've mentioned this to people before, is that a lot of the newer comics, they're drawn really cute and, you know, but you wouldn't expect the jokes that go along with them mm-hmm. to be part of those comics. And it's really funny, I might have mentioned this to you when you interviewed me, is I've always felt that I do comics for people that normally wouldn't read comics. You know, I'm doing comics for, like, the crowd that's not the normal comic crowd, you know. Not
that's interesting, yeah. No, I don't think that came up, but that's interesting to hear it now, and it does fit.
Yeah, you know, it's not, I don't do the stuff for the superhero fans, because, you know, that's the mainstream. That's, you know, that's already out there. You know,
it's very autobiographical.
Yeah, it's really weird, because I don't think about that too much, but there's so much that I'm pulling from my everyday life that, you know, I'm drawn on to make, you
that's
know,
what makes it so interesting.
To make fun of things.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's what makes it interesting and attractive to me is when I was drawing I used to do the same thing. People that would piss me off or whatever, I'd make cartoons of them and kind of try to ruin their lives that way. Sometimes I had success and sometimes I didn't. But and I hate to bring up an old cliche, but it's like no truer words were like the pen is mightier than the sword. The people would come in and give me a hard time and I could make a cartoon of them. And once I made a cartoon of them, other people could see the cartoonness about it, if that makes any sense.
Oh,
so I guess
no, it's great because, I mean, I can use the pen to convey social commentary. Those were, like, the first big comics I did when I moved to St. Pete. And my first thought was that I was doing these comics that I thought were making fun of punks.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was going to get my ass kicked. And turns out they fell in love with them, and I got this huge fan base just from doing that. And they're, you know, it was funny because they could laugh at some of the stereotypes as part of their, you know, culture, part mm-hmm. of their, you know, what they're part of.
And we can kind of see the punk world through your eyes. For those of us not exactly into the culture of it, it makes a lot of sense. And the autobiographical part of your drawing is very accessible that way. We can feel it because you feel it.
Yeah, and it's really weird because there's been so much stuff that's influenced me that you can tell a lot of the stuff.
Now that's interesting. Now speaking of influences, who have been your influences growing up as far as art? Now Harvey Pekar leaps to mind as for us older folks.
Yeah, it's
somebody very autobiographical.
Well, American Splendor is a great movie, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, early on, you know, Charles Schulz and Bill Watterson, the guy who did Calvin and Hobbes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was into the superhero stuff like crazy. You know, mm-hmm. like X-Men, Superman, and Batman. Like all that, I was nuts about it, and I still got all this stuff. I still have tons of old superhero stuff that I've drawn, comics that I've drawn, you know, parodies of stuff. X-Men parodies and then
I'd like to see them all these days.
They're very interesting. I think it's like 10, 11, 12 years old. And then I'm going down the timeline here.
Sure.
My first comic convention in I think it was March 95. March 96, a friend of mine had bought a comic that was, he accidentally left in my backpack. It was a cool little, you know, small press book that someone had made. And I was looking through it and I go, I can do this. So,
do you remember what convention that was?
It was the Motor City Comic Con, and it was...
up north, of course, yes.
Yeah, up north. It wasn't in Detroit. It was in Novi, suburb of Detroit.
Hmm.
And it was March 23rd, 1996.
Remember to the day.
And then it was really weird because once I did, I looked at the book, I go, I can do this. And I drew my first, you know, real strip. I had drawn some other strips before that, and I still have those too, like the pre-Josh Comics days. But the very first strip I did, it was a humor strip, which was really weird because, you know, pretty much everything that influenced me was superhero stuff and, you know, more drama. And so it was really weird, you know, it was just like fate that I had done a humor thing, you know, that I eventually ended up doing, you know, nothing but humor stuff, you know. There's some things here and there that I've done where it's been, you know, just regular comics, or, you know, it's not, there hasn't been, like, real humor to it. It's just been something like a drawing that's been, like, in a comic form, but, you know, about a serious subject or something.
But desired to do any superheroes besides your first inspiration?
You know, I've drawn some here and there. I've painted even a couple superhero-type things, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, once I started getting into the humor stuff, then I started getting drawn towards more humor-oriented artists like Evan Dorkin, and I got in a copy of Malkin Cheese, and that, you know, that was pretty much, you know, that pretty much wrote the story on me. You know, Malkin Cheese was a huge influence on me.
Now, I think you and I talked, and I hope I'm not confusing this with somebody else. Wasn't there a pivotal... revelation there, or your first inspiration was the death of Superman? Was that you and
actually,
I talking
yeah,
about?
You know, and I always forget about that, but that was... You
19,
know,
I want to say 1992?
Yeah, I think it was 92 or somewhere around there, but mm-hmm. I always forget about that. That was really, you know, what drew me to comics. You know, I'd been an Archie fan before that. And
we all were Archie
fans.
I'm presuming to speak for the rest of fandom.
Thankfully, I still have all my Archie comics.
Thank good.
And I still have the very first comic I ever owned was Betty and Veronica number 13.
Wow, that's pretty old.
Which I stole from my sister.
Ah. Well, is your sister down here too?
Or no, she's in Michigan.
She's back in, okay. So that's, okay, that accounts for it being, how old is she?
She's 21.
Oh, really? She's 21 now?
Yeah.
So she's younger than you?
Yeah.
I'm wondering how she got number 13.
Well, I think it was like a re-release thing, or, you know, like a new series, because I think it was from 87.
Interesting.
So.
Now, the funny thing about the death of Superman is, and I think we touched on this once before, is that was the one actually where I pivoted off comics because I found it to be a cop-out and kind of disappointing. They had just come off of... The Crisis on Infinite Earth for DC Comics. This was in the 80s, and then the Marvel had tried the Wars thing. I'm fading out at the moment. What was the War?
Secret Wars.
Secret Wars. I keep wanting to say Star
Wars.
Secret Wars thing.
I worked at a comic shop. I still have all this knowledge.
And I like Secret Wars, and I sort of like Crisis on Infinite Earths, but I could tell that it was at that point they were no longer going to be writing comics for baby boomers, those that had grown up in the with them in the 60s and 70s, because the chronology and the timelines were just getting too confusing.
Well, with the death of Superman, with all the huge, you know, with the media hype and everything, and me being, you know, like 10 or 11 years old, I'm just eating this all up. I'm like,
oh, absolutely. I'm not judging you on it. Please don't think I am.
No,
but
no.
That did bring a lot of attention to a younger generation, which is what they wanted, I think.
It got a lot of people interested in comics. And for the most part, it was really weird that, aside from that, the Superman, you know, the whole death of Superman stuff, at least with my friends, like, they were sort of drawn in by that, but mm-hmm. then they went to Marvel. You know, they weren't reading a lot of DC comics.
Back when I was a kid, when the Earth was still enshrouded in mist and dinosaurs still walked around, one was known for starting with DC and growing into Marvel. I'm not sure that is still the case, but it's like
Marvel. I haven't read any of that crap in years. With me, you know, it started with Archie and then DC, then Marvel, and then just before I started getting into the indie comics, I went back to DC because I was getting into the Vertigo stuff. I'd become interested in the Flash again and Impulse, I was huge into Mark Waid. Just nuts about him. And
DC made a huge comeback. Some would point back actually to Batman 1985, The Dark Knight.
Oh yeah, and I have the trade paperback in my room. One of the few mainstream comics that I still have.
Yeah, that was quite a history making thing.
It's really weird because I really enjoy the story, but I hate that art.
And I'm having another brain fart. I can't remember the big shot artist.
Frank Miller.
Frank Miller, yes. Didn't he go on to script RoboCop 3 or something like that?
Yeah, but Frank Miller, he's really cool nowadays because he's a huge purveyor of indie comics, like indie comic artists, like bringing awareness to to indie comics and like. Rights of comic artists, you know, he's a huge supporter of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.
That's good. That's
and,
very good.
You know, I was at the Small Press Expo last year, and he was there as one of the guests, and I guess he's always there as a speaker, and he always has a lot of good stuff to say about, being supportive of indie comics and stuff, you know, because for what I've always been preaching to people is that, you know, indie comics is where you're going to find a lot of stuff that you're definitely not going to see in the mainstream comics, and if you're looking for something different, then definitely check out indie comics.
Mm-hmm. And once you discover indie comics for real, it's kind of hard looking at mainstream comics the same way again.
You know, and I pretty much turned my back on mainstream after that, you know.
I think anybody who sticks with it really, put this very carefully, without judging people who collect comics, they have every right to, you know, to collect what they want to collect. But for an artist, an aficionado, a collector, let's say an artist, I think my feeling was if you kind of identified with the artists and the writers on the comics themselves, you aspired to be a professional one day, then the mainstream comics is what you'd be wanting to follow to see what they were doing, what they were about. The independents were obviously not going to make as much money, although some of them were surprising. But it was unusual, like Teenage Mutant Ninja, going way back. I mean, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and a few of those came from the garage and actually wound up being movies. But isn't it interesting that the ones that stood the test of time and they're still making in the movies are ones that largely started in the 60s, Hellboy notwithstanding, and a few others like that. The X-Men, Superman, Batman, all that, all started in the 60s.
Well, it's really weird. The comic world alone is a really weird world. And, now that movies are meshing into that, you know, it's getting even more confusing, and there's, you know, and this has been going on for years now, where they're, you know, film companies are just picking up properties just because they look neat, you know, and they're not really thinking about a good story, or, you know, how it's gonna, you know, stay true to the original comic form. They just want to make a funky movie, you know, and so I don't know, you know, there's.
Well,
The Mask was a huge hit, and, you know, that was just a funky comic.
That's a very, very good point. The Mask was a huge hit. That was one of the earliest ones to break out of the independent scene and into movies.
But then again, you know, around the same time, it was Tank Girl and Judge Dredd and, like, all these other, like, movies that didn't do very good, you know, and those were just comics that these companies had picked up.
Your generation gets older, and more money is poured into those projects. It's possible the Superman and Batman and Fantastic Four's movies of the world will start to fade in favor of the undergrounds that you grew up with.
Yeah, well, you know, American Splendor was, you know, it wasn't a huge hit,
but it was extremely well received.
Yeah, it was very well received. Ghost World, you know, that, like, so many people are in love with Ghost World, and that, you know. you know, that's based on a comic.
Yeah, one of my writers, Terrence Newsom, he's, we frequently call our staff punk, almost never writes reviews, but he wrote one of Ghost World. He felt that strongly about it. Said it really, really conveyed youthful depression really well. And it actually conveyed the comic really well, actually. On the most important thing. All right, well, that's excellent. Let me just put it this way. When did you kind of start getting attracted into going into a musical direction?
It's weird because I never imagined being in a band. You know, it was always something that, you know, I dreamed about, but never even fathomed the idea. You know, I've never had any musical training really. You know, just singing along with songs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the Globe one day last summer, and, these guys, you know, they're my friends now, but, you know, at the time, I just thought of them as, you know, these guys that kept coming in, bugging me all the time. And I was...
Friends of Josh, heard what you'd just been called. Okay, go ahead.
I was singing along to something, and Josh, our guitar player, is like, hey, you should sing in this band I'm starting up. And I go, yeah, right, I don't know how to sing. And so he kept bugging me for like 3 months, and then, you know, I finally caved in and went to a practice, and it was just me, Josh the guitarist, and Andy the drummer. And, you know, that first practice was great. You know, we just, you know, screwed around, and I wrote a song, and, you know, I was like, all right, well, I can do this. And so we had another practice, and then the practice after that, all of a sudden there was like 7 people there, and I was like, all right, well, so I just kept doing it and kept working at it. And, you know, all of a sudden we ended up getting shows, and we started getting fans, and we started selling CDs, and, you know, people were emailing us, and, after we got a show on, coming up this week, after this show, we've had 3 big shows in the past 3 weeks, and we've only had, you know, a total of 9 shows after this week.
And you are still trying to keep balance with your comic art, which I should mention now. A lot of Josh's comics and his paintings are available on his website at joshcomics.com and on eBay. And I think you have a link on Josh Comics to your eBay site.
You know, eBay was a huge help in getting my art out there, too. You know, at one point I was selling my original comic art to people that had said they were fans of, like, regular comic art, you know, like, mm-hmm. like X-Men, Superman. Like, there was a guy... He said he bought nothing but Punisher art, but he had seen one of my comics and said that he just fell in love with it and he had to bid on it.
it's very personable, and it's like I said, strangely autobiographical. It feels like people can get to know you through your art. Sometime this summer, this past summer of 2004, as the band was getting some success, you started CantDoIt.net. Can't Do It is the name of your band. Which you describe as ska punk. How would you describe that?
Yeah, ska punk, death metal.
Death metal.
Carnival craziness. You know, we play pretty much whatever, and it's great because with you know, being that there's 8 people in the band, there's so many musical influences that are, you know, we're drawing from now. And, you know, we'll be at practice and we'll play a blues song, you know, or we'll play a jazz song, or, you know, there's been times where we play country songs, you know, it's cool, you know, we have fun doing anything, you know, we're not just going to limit ourselves to ska, because, you know, there's a lot of ska bands out there that, you know, all their songs sound the same.
When I think of punk, before I met you and talked to you more, I never really paid a whole lot of attention to ska. Punk to me was like Green Day and Blink-182 and going way back.
Well, it's really like weird because the comics actually advanced me musically, because when I had done the punk comics, I didn't know anything about punk music. I was just, you know, drawing on stereotypes to make comics. And then I wanted to learn more about it, so I started listening to more punk music, and that helped build on...
That's interesting. You listen to punk music to build on your comics.
Yeah, and it's really weird because now it's helping me, you know, musically, you know, become, you know, a better singer, become, you know, more aware of different things, you know, in the punk and ska worlds, you know, and it's really cool because now I'm really happy that I'm part of not only, you know, the local music scene, But, you know, the ska scene, you know, which was something I'd always wanted but never thought I could have because, you know, I'd never really done anything musically.
If your band members don't wouldn't mind, or if you don't think they would mind, you go ahead and name them if you want and what instrument they play. Eight people is quite a few people to have in a band.
There's me, and I'm on vocals, and I am also attempting to learn a trumpet, trombone, and harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
There's Josh Fuller on lead guitar and vocals.
Frequently referred to as Josh
2. Josh 2.
All right.
George Rectus on rhythm guitar. And he's really cool. He's into a lot of, you know, heavy metal stuff. So he'll play a lot of heavy metal riffs under the ska riffs, and it's a really cool combination.
And that's his name is George?
Yeah.
Good for you, George. Keep up that metal riffing.
And there's Jeff Sears on bass.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Tyler Sales on trumpet, as well as Matt Sims on trumpet. And there's Kat DeNome on saxophone, and she also sings on one of the songs that newer songs that we got.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Andy Moore on drums, and it's really cool because I'm the old man of the group. I'm 23, and you know there's the ages range from the others from 16 to 19, and it's really cool. But because I never think about that, you know, we're all just we're all just a group of friends playing music that we really like, and it's cool though because they're they're younger than me and they're really talented, you know, and so they've really helped me advance musically too because I've learned from them.
The audience can hear some samples of this. I guess you just go to can'tdoit.net, right?
And yeah, we got a bunch of different stuff. I'll be adding, you know, I'm always adding new stuff. So.
And you have some CDs for sale?
Yeah, we just came out with a new CD a couple weeks ago called Odor Problem, and it's actually a re-release of our first CD straight out of the sweatshop. But then our first CD was only 7 minutes and 22 seconds long, so this one is 78 minutes and something seconds, and
full album.
Yeah, it's got the demo. It's got a bunch of practice versions of stuff. It's got a bunch of live versions of stuff. A bunch of funny sound clips. You know, basically whatever I could fill, you know, on this, you know, put on the CD, and it actually flows really, really nicely. You know, there's a. It's cool because you can listen to it and you can laugh too, as well as sing along to some of our songs.
Okay, now name some of the places you played.
Well, we played at the Globe. We've played at Neptune's Lounge in Tarpon Springs. Our first two shows were actually at the Palm Bay Hotel, which was really cool because we got to play outside. Our big goal was to play at the State Theater, and we got to play there a few weeks ago, and that was amazing.
I heard that went really well.
Huge, you know, huge turnout. We were pretty much well received by everyone that was there.
I'm very glad.
We just played a new nightclub called The Bank in St. Pete, which is actually, it used to be a bank. So, there's all these like hidden rooms and there's a vault and, you know, it's really, really spacious and a really cool place.
Now, where's The Bank?
It's 1919 Central Avenue in St. Pete.
And more importantly, I guess, where's The Globe?
The Globe is 532 First Avenue North in St. Pete.
Okay, and that's where Josh plumbs his trade in the daytime as he plumbs his trade at night, doing Can't Do It and doing his art. Now your next play, I'm gonna try to have this up in time, this radio show up in time. This is, Wednesday, December 1st. Now, Thursday, December 2nd, you're going to be at the Masquerade.
Yep, we just got offered this show last night, so it's real last minute. And as long as everything works out, as long as you get some, few other bands to play with us, we will be playing, I'm hoping at least it'll be an all ska show, so it'll be cool to listen to different bands playing different ska. My phone's dying, and
I'm gonna be dying too. Okay, well we'll wrap up. Any shows after that, really quickly?
What's that?
Any shows after that, really?
We don't have any lined up, but they always seem to just happen now. And we got a few that might be coming at different venues, like the Scooter Shop and St. Pete, and possibly the State a few more times, but, you know, we're just going with the flow now and seeing what happens.
All right, Josh, thanks so much for being on Nolan Radio. Before your phone dies, I wanted to thank you
for being here, Nolan.
With us. Oh, you're very welcome. And everyone out there, check out joshcomics.com and can'tdoit.net to keep on top of the artistic shenanigans of Joshua Sullivan.
And that's pretty much where it cut off. more due to my software problems than to Josh's phone. But anyway, thank you again, Josh, for appearing on The World of Nolan. We sincerely wish you the best of luck at the Masquerade and all your future endeavors. I hope to keep on top of that, and I'm sure Josh will be returning to visit us sometime in the near future. For Nolan Radio, this is Nolan Bikinova, signing out.